PTF here. Before we start the show, just want to remind you about our latest partners at StableDuel. Games are up and running. Very successful first weekend on the relaunch. You can get lots of information at StableDuel.com. You can download the StableDuel app and you can play in games this week. There's going to be special games for Keeneland. Keep an eye out. Check out the full schedule. This is a great way to get involved in racing. Another fun way to compete and win. Check it out. StableDuel.com or the StableDuel app. Hello and welcome to the In the Money podcast. This is our show for Monday, July 6th. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornatow. We've driven back across the mountains and I'm back at the little house on the east side on this Monday. What a week we have in horse racing. We've got the quote unquote Royal Keeneland meeting starting on Wednesday. We're going to be getting to that a little bit later in the show. We've also got Del Mar about to start, people. That's going down. I can't remember if it's Friday or Saturday. My co-host will know. We'll bring him in to talk about that in just a minute. Before we get started, I will just give out a quick plug. The Keeneland Grade 1 Gamble is back. You can play through various ADWs, a rare and wonderful instance of entities within racing working with each other to do something really cool. You know how we feel about that. Hint, we like it. We want to support it. We want you to support it. And instead of giving you indecipherable URL somewhere in the deep corners of the Keeneland ticketing website, I can tell you, if you want more information about the $3,000 buy-in Grade 1 gamble, you can find it right on our site, inthemoneypodcast.com/Keeneland. We want as many of you to play in this event as possible. And we'll talk more about the specific of racing at Keeneland. I couldn't get that word out, but I'm going to leave it in. We're going to talk more about the specifics of racing at Keeneland later in the show. We also have an incredible weekend of racing to review and to do it all with you and me. We're going to bring him in now, folks, from the planet Texas. He's the people's champion. He's Jonathan Kinchin. What's up, JK?
PTF, what's going on? Yeah, Royal meeting, or the last two Royal meetings that I've watched, there's been some rain. It seems like that might be coming for the Keeneland Royal.
They might
Royal
be having meeting. Some English weather at Keeneland, though probably not for Wednesday, which is a good thing.
Yeah, which stinks, right? I mean, obviously, they were was probably a big obstacle for Keeneland to get that meet on for their horsemen and for the community there. And I know as horse players, I would imagine most people are really excited about the opportunity to have a little quick run at Keeneland for 5 days on our way north to Saratoga. So it's going to be a lot of fun, weather permitting. Obviously, the fact that they're only having 5 days and they have a whole long break, safety aside, I would think that the turf course's future is not going to be something that they're going to be overly concerned with. I think they'll be
the
more
old
concerned.
Days, they never took off the turf. They right. never right. took off the turf at Keeneland in the pre-synthetic era. And then obviously the synthetic era, with the synthetic being more similar, they would take off at the drop of a hat, it seemed. But I wonder if for this meet, they will go back to the old way. Because obviously these days in the recent Keeneland dirt meets, they have taken off on a fairly regular basis. We'll see what they do. Hopefully the racing is going to go on undeterred. And the good thing about the foul weather with Keeneland just being a TV studio this time around, it's not going to change it for us. We'll be watching via simulcast anyway. There's also some really cool stuff on the Keeneland site about this, and they're using a hashtag Keeneland at home, and they've got all kinds of fun things you could do. JK, maybe you can get into this week. There were some kids activities on there that I know I'll be availing myself of, and also a number of recipes, including for the Keeneland burgoo. I know you're all about that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I haven't made it yet, which is kind of a shame. Been locked in this house would be a perfect time to try to make some burgoo, but I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun meet. I'm looking forward to watching Rushing Fall. I'm not sure what day her race is. I didn't do that much research, but I know she is going to be running and I'm looking forward to seeing her again.
Speaking of research that I didn't do, the Del Mar meeting that's about to begin, that's this weekend. Is it Friday?
My bad. Yeah, it is. Friday. Starts Friday. I think it's the 10th. Yeah. So Friday they'll be rocking and rolling. That'll be fun as well to see where the turf meets the surf, and Larry Colmus is going to be calling that meet. So that'll be interesting to hear his voice over those races with those graphics. You know, we're used to hearing Trevor, but I hear he's laying low in Minnesota.
Not a bad decision, honestly, but it's great to have Larry as part of those festivities as well. There's a joke to be made somewhere about a Del Mar opening day with no fans. I'm not sure if this podcast is the place to make it, though. If you pick up what I'm laying down.
Oh, I'm picking it up.
We'll just let that lie. There's enough people in horse racing getting canceled lately. We do not need to join their midst. Speaking of being canceled in the more literal sense, we got the frustrating, sad news out of Lone Star Park that their meet is going to be suspended due to concerns about COVID-19. We were having so much fun playing those races on the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and following along. We don't have much news or much analysis to offer other than, I mean, to me, you're nuts if you don't think that taking the safe route is the right route these days. So props to them for the difficult decision. Well, maybe it wasn't even difficult, but props to them for doing the right thing and shutting it down while things are hopefully going to be getting under control in your home state, JK. And we hope that they can find a safe way to get back online soon. And anything to add about Lone Star before we move things along?
No, I mean, I'm a proud Texan, but I'm a little flustered at the moment by some of our choices. So the rest of the world who sees the world in a different way, don't judge us off of this, hopefully.
Well, we're getting ready. As exciting as it is to have Keeneland and Del Mar starting, of course, Saratoga not too far away. And we had a preview of one of the things we're going to be seeing at Saratoga this past weekend at Belmont, and that's top-notch stakes racing in New York. Which performance impressed you the most, JK? And we'll start there.
I mean, I think there's three that were just really good, right? And you have to respect all of them. I mean, I think on the show yesterday, I talked about Social Paranoia just because, like, that was my best bet. So that was the one that I got assigned to. But closing into that slow pace was really good. And, there were some other horses in there that had trips. But, you know, I don't think his – I mean, he was unimpeded on the outside. But still, he closed into a slow pace. And so I think that his performance was impressive. You know, obviously, you got to give a lot of love to Tacitus, who finally got over the hump to prove that he was the good horse that I think a lot of us always thought he was. He just was very unlucky. And a lot of that luck wasn't even really on him. You know, I mean, I think that if you look at the Jim Dandy, that was really the only one that you'd want to assign to him. He couldn't control the fact that he drew outside at the Belmont when the rail was good. You can't control the fact that he was kind of, you know, put into the race with the blinkers on and the Travers, he still ran well. The only race he didn't really run well in, I guess, was the Jockey Club Gold Cup, but I think he had a little bit of excuse too. He ran into two monsters and Vino Rosso, who went on to win the Breeders' Cup Classic, and then Code of Honor, who's a Travers winner, who's obviously a darn good horse in his own right. And then obviously we got to talk about Vekoma and how impressive he was and in the last two races, the way he's run you know, I made a prediction a couple weeks ago that there's I made a prediction for one horse of the year finalist. I'm going to make another one now. I think that the third spot is the only one available for horse of the year finalist this year. I think Newspaper of Record and Vekoma will be in the final three. Who that third one is, we'll have to see. But yeah, I think Vekoma will win the forego find a little prep race in between then and the Breeders' Cup. And then if he wins the Breeders' Cup Sprint, he's got a really strong argument for horse of the year, and maybe he wins. Maybe they run him in the mile, but why? I mean, as good as he is around one turn, he's undefeated around one turn. What's the point of doing that kind of short stretch, tricky, funny first short run into the first turn mile race at Keeneland? Just run him in the sprint. He'll get pace to close into or sit off of, and I just think he's really impressive. I'm looking forward to seeing him up at Saratoga as well.
Let's stick with Vekoma for a minute, who earned a 104 buyer speed figure. What were you surprised that he ended up on the lead in that spot? And did you feel, look, I've always loved the horse. I ended up feeling a little bit stuffed in a locker by how good he was and feeling a little mad at myself that I didn't give him more of a push as a horse I've always liked who ran such a big race.
Yeah, I mean, I got a little cute there. It's one of those situations where, you know, knowing too much can bite you. I mean, I think that knowing a lot is you know, knowing too much is usually a good thing. But I think on Saturday, it kind of hurt me a little bit. I know that George had kind of expressed to, you know, obviously him and Jake are close with the partnership of Up and Smoke and stuff. And I just, George was just, he was a little nervous about running him back so quick. It was the first time he'd really done that. George is a, I think he's a subscriber of, he's a sheet, you know, just like Tom Amos is as well, sheets or rags, whichever ones it is. And so, you know, there's a little bit of bounce theory to those guys. And so I think he was just concerned how big he ran the time before and the 28 days that he was just a little nervous, you know, just nervous. It's the best horse he's ever had. And so that nervousness was kind of, you know, making him maybe not like less confident, but just, you know, he was expressing, you know, I just hope it's not too quick. And so I just kind of ended up leaning on McKenzie and Code of Honor. I mean, I used Vekoma, but I leaned on those other two. So
what about the pace?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you are. I was surprised that I didn't use him as much as I should have. And when he was on the lead, I got a little bit more concerned, like, oh man, I should have used him more. Yeah, I'm surprised he made the lead, but he's the type of horse that it's not shocking. No one went with him. They didn't go very fast early for that level for those types of horses. So I thought he was impressive, and I thought that Javier did a great job to kind of get out of his way and let him do his thing. Gave him a breather in that second and third quarter. In fact, I'm going to have John Panigot on JK Plus One this week, Javier's agent, to talk a little bit about the journey with Javier and how he got into racing. And so, you know, I thought Vekoma was good and the race worked out perfectly for him. And I think Code of Honor is a horse you want to bet out of that race closing into that pace.
Yeah, it came up just coded as honest. It did look to me, I thought Code of Honor looked like winning for a second, turning in. And coming out of the race, I saw a lot of chatter about people thinking the track was tilted towards inside and speed. I wasn't intuiting that in real time. I thought it looked maybe like the mile was a little sharp for Code of Honor, and that got him. It combined with what you're saying about the pace maybe not being as fast as you'd expect for a typical Met mile. So I'm glad you agree with me that Code of Honor is one you potentially want out of that race. Did you have any opinion on how the track was playing on Saturday?
No, not necessarily. I mean, you know, even the more and more I've kind of got into it, I just start kind of feeling like I want to wait to see how horses run out before I jump to conclusions about how the track was. Vekoma's a really good horse that the pace wasn't crazy fast. So the fact, and he won that race while slowing down on the buyer speed figures scale. To me, it's not that the rail wasn't good. If the rail was good, then I don't think he would have gone backwards. I just don't.
On the buyer scale. That's
right. I just feel like it was, and we saw it with No Parole a couple weeks ago. I just think the circumstances of how these races are run can lead people to believe that a track is playing a certain way. And I feel like it's a little bit of a crutch for some when their opinion's wrong.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Jake Jacobs, who will be on one of our shows eventually, I love Jake, racingflow.com, has the great line that there are more track bias players than there are track biases. And this is a guy who obviously believes in the concept and has a whole product dedicated to mathematically pointing out when he thinks tracks may be tilted one way or another. And even he's agreeing with you about that. I did think the Belmont day, I mean, just, I don't know, you know, it's one of those things. It's just like my gut opinion was that it was hard to close that day. I didn't have that opinion on this day. I thought it seemed fair, and I think your explanation makes a whole lot more sense, and I'm very interested. I think this is a very talented group of horses, including Warrior's Charge, who, you know, went attempted to take on a horse with a pace advantage in the spot in Vekoma, who was drawn to his inside, and still showed gameness, and even though he didn't hit the board, I thought acquitted himself very, very well, and, you know, made me proud to be a fan. I'll admit I was caught surprised by Network Effect Run. Did you have any thoughts on that? And then we should touch on McKenzie, and then maybe we'll move things
along. Yeah, it was just Irad. I mean, he just gave the horse a great ride, you know? I mean, cutting in line to bet Network Effect and grade one races around one turn the rest of the year or anything like that. I think he just, it just kind of worked out. McKenzie blew two shoes. And to be honest with you, I'd have to sit down with a horseman to really understand the legitimacy of that, how much that affects. But it seems like whenever it happens, people point it out, so it must matter to a certain extent. He ranged up like he was gonna do his thing, and he just kind of leveled off there. He didn't run poorly, and considering the fact that he was kind of coming from out of it as well, I think that his performance might have been better than it looked. So I still think he'll progress on to be heard from later in the year.
Interesting note on Timeform US, he actually improved his figure off the, I guess it was the triple bend the previous race, going from a 118 Timeform figure to a 121. Here's a very interesting figure maker debate, figure maker's corner. I'd love to get, that was a fun show. I think it was for the Breeders' Cup. We had Paul Matisse and Sean Borman on talking racing, and that's a tandem we need to bring back at some point. But I'd love to get them to talk to me about why on the buyer scale you have Vekoma running a 104 and Tacitus running a 100, but on the time form scale, and I'll just use the raw numbers, Vekoma 125, which is basically the equivalent of a 105 buyer, and then Tacitus running faster on that scale, earning a 127 on both figures, suggesting Tacitus ran the faster race. I mean, better relative. But I thought that was just interesting from a figure maker point of view. Personally, I was as impressed by Tacitus, I'll say that. And I thought, I wonder if you noticed this. Were you on with Gary for the, you know, I was on TV myself, so I normally love to watch you, but I didn't get a chance for obvious reasons. But were you on with Gary for this race by chance?
No, Gary hadn't been on. He's in California.
Gotcha. He made a point when he crashed. I say crashed. We invited him and we're incredibly grateful that he took time out of his busy day. But one of the best, there's a couple of moments on our Horse Player happy hours that really stand out to me. Michelle, you calling a race. That was one of the great ones. But maybe my top favorite, it was Gary coming by to join us. And he was talking about this thing that jockeys do. He liked the analogy. I likened it to a guy hits a home run and flips the bat. And did you notice John Velasquez, before he made his move, just as they were starting to turn in on Tacitus, slowly reaching up and almost theatrically removing the pair of goggles? Let me tell you, if there'd been in running betting on this race, when I saw that move with how Tacitus was traveling, I would have just, you know, bet it all at 1-10 or whatever it would have been at that point. Probably a little bit bigger than that. He had it under him that day. And obviously, you know, we're not going to crow here too much, but it was wonderful to see Tacitus do what we thought he could do at a mile and a quarter and just go ahead and run away with it. But I was curious if you caught that moment.
I did. Yeah, no, he was never losing at that certain point at the race. I almost forgot that to watch him. I had my eyes on Moretti the whole time, just because that's kind of where I was. A lot of my play was focused at the moment. I wanted to, you know, Mr. Buff, seeing if he made the lead, and then thinking to myself, I'm such an idiot that I didn't see parsimony with Kendrick and Doug O'Neill not going to the front end at 57-1. I don't know how I didn't see that coming. But you know, Tacitus is, man, he's going to keep on making noise. And I don't know if you saw this or not, but the Woodward this year is a mile and a quarter. So the fact that to wrap up the meet at Saratoga, he'll get that mile and a quarter that we know he likes again. So
awesome.
I think he's definitely a dangerous foe moving forward to the handicap.
But I'm going to just crow a little bit more, because I did something that was semi out of character. You know, I try to be like as extremely nice as possible. You know, even if I have a strong opinion, I'm not somebody who wants to say it in a way like I know everything and everybody else is wrong. But it was, this was the last race we did. I had a 10-minute break before it. There was the big barbecue going on the deck with all the family. I was coerced, JK, into having, I've been doing this little reset. Haven't been drinking much at all, and was offered a small glass of whiskey, which I decided to opt that I normally, here's a shocker, try not to drink when I'm on TV. Horse Players Happy Hour excluded, as some of the early broadcasts of that particular show will prove. But I had my little whiskey. I went back in, and I must have been feeling froggy, JK, because I jumped when my co-host suggested for a minute that, you know, Sir Winston could be a threat to Tacitus in the race based on the form of last year's Belmont. And we played the video and I talked over it, giving, you know, the analysis that we've each given half a dozen times on the show, and closed it by saying something to the effect of Tacitus beat Sir Winston in this spot every day of the week, 17 times on Sunday. And if there's anybody out there who would like the opposite side of the wager, you know, I'm very happy to give odds. Something like, I'm as sure as anything as I've ever been in horse racing, the Tacitus is finishing ahead of Sir Winston today.
Yeah, that's
a little arrogant.
Yeah, it's all right. Sometimes that's good to do that every now and again. Just make sure they know you mean business.
Out of character, off brand, as we say. But any other stories? I think we've covered the Suburban. Really, I don't. You know, there was a one horse race, and that's how it played out. So feel free to run it back there when I ask you the next question if you have anything more. But if not, let's talk about the Grade One Manhattan, where Instilled Regard made a furious late run in what was a unusually run race. Very strange looking at the time form US coding, where even the half, which was raw 50-2, and the 6 furlong, which was raw almost 116 flat, just under, were coded red, and then the mile got coded blue, and yet Instilled Regard closes and wins. And another, I mean, for me, one of the biggest takeaways is unbelievable Irad Ortiz, I thought. I was very, very impressed by the run this horse made. And, you know, I can make all the wise guy cases I want, but Chad Brown's still pretty much going to run 1-2.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, here's the deal. The Instilled Regard won because I still think that he doesn't want to run that far, but he just got a great trip behind a slow pace and out-quickened these other horses that I think Rock Emperor's got a little hang in him. I think Sadler's Joy is going to win a race at Saratoga when they go 3 turns. Channel Maker's not the same. Cross Border went too slow on the front end. Spooky Channel's not very good. Devamani's not very good. And Dot didn't run his race. So I just feel like Instilled Regard just kind of won by default with a beautiful, beautiful ride by Irad. I don't want any of them out of here except for Sadler's Joy. I want Sadler's Joy out of here. At Saratoga, and I've faded Sadler's Joy in his last 2 races. I will not fade him when he gets around 3 turns at Saratoga. That's where he excels. He's in good form. He's just not getting the scenarios that he wants to close into, and I think he'll get him at Saratoga. So that's my take from this one. I'll keep trying to beat Instilled Regard. He is no bricks and mortar, and he's not going to keep winning races like this.
I love what you said about Sadler's Joy and was very impressed with his run where I was pretty anti. Matt Bernier made an excellent, excellent race design case for Channel Maker, and the horse got the exact, like, perfect trip and still couldn't do it. So I think we know where he is. It wasn't beaten all that far, and, you know, he could fluke another big one, but, you know, my days of sticking with him are gone. And Cross Border, that was one of those picks where I felt like we didn't win, but I felt like it was the right pick when you pick a 12th one shot that gets beaten less than a length in a race that maybe could have been run more efficiently and increase the chance. So I wouldn't give up on the idea that Cross Border may find one of these races where he can kind of bottom out a field. And again, I am surprised. I thought it was slow too. So I'm surprised to see the time form US coding come back what it is. But I'm not quite ready to give up on a wise guy Cross Border scenario, only because I think he'll be even a bigger price. I'm guessing he'll be a bigger price next time, because even though he's beaten whatever it is, like a little more than a length, it's going to be a 5 in the right, far right column of the running line. And I think people are going to potentially overlook him, and maybe having a lesser named, there's nothing against Jose. I mean, look, I think you made a good point. Maybe it wasn't exactly how we would have wanted him ridden. I'm not going to criticize the jockey particularly over that, but I will say Cross Border is one I wouldn't mind a different rider on just to increase the price, because, you know, you pay the Ortiz tax, and that might be why this one was 11-1 instead of 15. So yeah, anyway, I mean,
he'll be better off when they get to the mile and a half races as well. Yep. And, you know, when you kind of going 50 and 115, going 150 and 115 in a mile and a quarter kind of takes away what he's good at and what Mike Maker's good at. Those horses gallop along. They keep running. They find.
Stamina.
You know, fine. I just think that, you know, and I'm not even blaming Jose. I mean, you know, get on the front end, you got your clear there. It's, you know, I just think that maybe a little bit faster. He takes a little bit more of an advantage, a little bit further. He's got a little bit more of an advantage. So,
do you want to talk a little more about social paranoia? You were right on him. Naomi Tucker was right about him. I thought he was a contender, but I was like, you know, it was one of those things where I split a hair saying, oh, I want him to be 6-1. And I just had, you know, I thought there were other ways to go in the race. I ended up being dead wrong. I want to rewatch and see if Valid Point had any excuses. Ended up DFL dead flipping last. Social paranoia gets the money in the poker. Any other thoughts on this one?
No, I mean, I don't think Value Proposition is that good. Got Stormy. I think she's, look, maybe she'll show up at Saratoga, but I don't think she'll be a big enough price for me to forgive her last four races. And she'll
but are people going to get tired of her and not understand the fact that maybe she just likes Rattling Firm at her favorite racetrack?
She's going to have to deal with some, I mean, look, I just, you know, I don't see her getting into, look, I'm assuming the 4-star day would be next for her. I don't see her getting into a situation with newspaper of record forwardly placed, having to run at her at some point or dealing with Rushing Fall. I don't think she'll ever turn the tables on Rushing Fall. I don't see how she's ever going to beat Social Paranoia with Social Paranoia having some pace to run into with her being hooked. She surely ain't beating Without Parole or Raging Bull. I mean, I can keep going.
Yeah. Class relief might be in order as you give the rundown of those possible opponents.
Mm-hmm. I just think she's
class relief, confidence back, and then maybe take a shot in the Woodbine Mile or something.
This is a story we've seen before where these mares who are so talented make these beautiful, beautiful campaigns and they face the boys and they just don't come back the same. And that's fine. I'm not taking anything away from what she did last year. She had a stretch of four grade ones. It was awesome. But I just doesn't feel like she's the same horse right now.
Yeah, it's hard to argue, really, JK. I mean, it's a compelling argument. I just wasn't going to give up. If the crowd – I almost felt like the 4-1 on her was a case of everybody correctly being a wise guy. But I feel like if you were just a completely objective observer trying to price her up – like, I mean, that's very cold on the board given the high points of her form. I think people were picking up on what was going on. And I was just wondering if the next time that could almost go too far.
She's going to be 14-1 in the 4-star Dave.
You really think they'll go right in back into the deep water? I'd really like to see a class drop confidence boost. But
maybe. But I'm just saying if she runs in the I mean she can win that race. I'm saying she's not winning any grade one.
I just wondered if with the class drop confidence race where she should be 4-5, maybe you can get 2-1. Maybe, I don't know. We'll see. We'll actually know when these. We try not to go too far down the rabbit hole of building the castles in the air of what might happen. I'm really just almost devil's advocating. I mean, I'm not super excited and like you have been off her for a little while now, but I don't want to give up on one who achieved such heights last year. We'll have to see. We do need to talk about some racing from other places in the country. Did you have anything else, any races you wanted to talk about from Belmont on the weekend before we maybe go out and talk about Uncle Chuck and the Los Al Derby?
No, we can just chuck it up.
Chuck up the three. And Uncle Chuck wins with a 94 buyer speed figure. And how serious of a horse do you think this is? I mean, it couldn't have been an easier victory. Seems like at least a somewhat useful form yardstick in 1,000 words in here. You know, 2-5 and perfect trip and rolled and didn't overly impress on the clock. But in the hands of Bob Baffert, is this one that could have a bigger derby somewhere down the line with his name on it?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, he's impressive. He's lightly raced. He's run fast. I think he'll continue to run fast. He showed he's still a little green, still learning. I had heard it through the grapevine before the Los Al Derby that Baffert was high on this horse. And then, just a quick text exchange, he referred to him as a monster. So I think he's going to continue to progress. And I mean, imagine if the other two were still around. Good night. How many good horses does he have? So, yeah, I mean, I think he'll still, you know, I think he's going to be good. He's kind of a late bloomer. Feels a little bit like Arrogate, you know, big joker, kind of, you know, Arrogate wasn't that goofy a start, but a little goofy, a little late bloomer. I'd imagine we'll see him show up somewhere and probably end up in the starting gate for the Kentucky Derby.
Did the Los Al Derby have Derby? I hate to do this to you. They're asking the question that I don't know the answer to. I was guessing part of the reason was that it was a four horse field is that maybe it didn't have Derby points. So he'd have some work to do to get there. I mean, this Kentucky Derby is for modern horse racing where they come, they run once every 6 weeks. It's coming up quick.
Yeah, it is around the corner, isn't it? Yeah, I'm pretty sure the Los Al Derby had points. You stretched that out good enough. I think I can. Yeah. Not very many, only 20. Okay. So he got 20 for that. So you got to think that the Haskell's too close. The shared belief at Del Mar is there's 50 points there. So maybe okay. he'll run there.
There's How many weeks is that?
That's the August 1st. So that's plenty of time. The Travers, obviously, if he wanted to shoot for the stars, that's 100 points, obviously. And then there's two other races that I don't think he would show up in. So I guess, yeah. So I would
out
think
of the question.
Shared belief. Shared belief with a win and shared belief with a second might be close enough. I guess 40 points is 40 points would put you in 12th right now with our boy Max Player. So he's got 20 right now. If you were to, you know, maybe they'll we'll see what they do. But I'm assuming that, you know how Baffert is. He's not gonna jack around. If he wants to get the horse in the gate, he'll put him on a plane and take him where he needs to take him.
He's, I'm sure, busily trying to figure out what the exact next starts for Authentic. Brian Skirka, I thought, hinted that he thought that's the way that one was going to go for the Haskell. But also, of course, with Gamine and Uncle Chuck, it'll be interesting to see how this all shakes out. And in terms of recapping, I feel pretty good about where we are. You want to look at some of these races from Keeneland on Wednesday?
Yeah, so like race, you know, I guess we could just do the late pick four at, on Wednesday. It's going to be a lot of fun, man. It's going to be fun to have Keeneland in the middle, just kind of popped up on us in the middle of summer with so much other good fun stuff around the corner. I thought this race was, you know, there's three horses that are interesting. I mean, obviously Grace Creek, who won at Churchill for Chad, is an interesting one. Probably going to be overbet in here, but, you know, should end up getting a nice trip down from the inside. Makes sense from a talent standpoint. Scabbard is another one that I thought ran okay, considering that, you know, the heavy rain, the soft turf course. I kind of like the idea of him trying the turf. He's a more than ready. I want to give him another shot. Depending on his price, he's always a little bit overbet just because of that one run where everyone kind of fell in love with him when he lost to Dennis's Moment. I think Scabbard is an interesting one to take into consideration. I know you like Andesite, so I'll say that one for you. I agree with you. And then Attorney Tim is another horse that I thought was interesting, closing into a slow pace last time at Churchill. Attorney Tim would be my top pick in here from a you know, like a value.
Nice price. Yeah, 20-1 on the morning line.
Morning line, so take that, chalk eating weasels.
There, you can get that T-shirt. By the way, I think we have that link set up nifty through the site as well, JK. Now we don't have to. Instead of telling people, you know, I used to have to do the whole rigmarole about where they needed to go and tell them, you know, and then click the partners tab and then do this. Now, if you want to get our stuff from oldsmokeclothing.com, you can go directly to our page in themoneypodcast.com/oldsmoke, and you can see our complete array of our four shirts, the badge of honor for our friends at the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, the aforementioned chalky weasel. But you are not eating chalk at all in this spot with this runner who I agree fits, and maybe you're not going to get all of that 20-1, but certainly an opportunity to maybe get something in a little bit of a price. I'm uncreative here, but I've always admired Andesite, and I figure just based on the form, I mean, this is a horse that had, one of so many who had tricky trips in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, was running on late in that previous good graded stakes form. I even liked the maiden win going all the way back. Brad Cox typically brings him back fully formed. Ricardo in the irons, and just a horse that it's the old. I've started to use an abbreviation, okay? Because in England, there's that concept of weight for age. It can actually be frustrating to American eyes when you're looking at these numbers and they build in the projected improvement since the last time they ran. So that it's almost like an overcorrect, but this idea of speed for age, speed points for age, when you look at the figure they ran last year and project, you know, from 2 to 3, whatever improvement you want to make from fall of their 2-year-old year to summer of 3, on speed for age, Andesite might really, really have these in a good position. So I like your ideas, and we'll mess around with Andesite and those. And with that, I think we should move on to the seventh race, JK, if you have some quick thoughts on it. I was attracted by number 10, Verve's Humor, a horse who I thought has maybe turned a corner this year and has been running much better and just looked to fit. And this is a race where it looks like they're going to cook up front, and hopefully there's going to be enough of an opportunity for this one's closing kick to come into a play. Probably not a bad one for vertical players to also look at playing underneath in bets like the Exacta Try and Super, just because it can be a lot of ground to cover up, especially depending on how the track's playing. But Verve's Humor is one I wanted to put forward. What did you think about this starter allowance that goes as the seventh at Keeneland on Wednesday?
Yeah, I didn't really have a strong opinion. I thought Running Ray was interesting as kind of the speed of the speed. Ran for 50 last time, ran well enough, stretching out a little bit. I thought Adhar was interesting for Tom Amos. Tom got the horse to run well first out for him and then kind of had the bad race last time. I'm assuming, and I trust in Tom, that whatever the issue was that resulted in the bad race, I feel like he could probably fix that and get it going back towards the good race. And then I agree with you on Verve's Humor. Makes sense in there as well.
Let's talk about the eighth race, our feature. We've got a 5.5 furlong turf sprint allowance for three-year-olds. I am not always the guy who typically gravitates to Wesley Ward in turf sprints because I think that sometimes he catches more money than he should. But I've been very intrigued by Maven ever since the debut. And I just feel like on form, this is another one. Speed for age at the home track looks to me like is going to end up being the best speed. And just to steal a page out of your book, if you can always try to keep the best speed on side in these turf sprints, you're probably doing a decent job. What did you think about Maven and Keeneland's eighth?
Yeah, I mean, sure, he's going to be over bet, but he can win. And has a great chance of winning. I mean, but I just feel like there's probably some other ideas in here. I thought Digital was interesting. I know they've kind of already always liked Digital. Digital's made a menacing run in the Risen Star, going long on that, on the dirt. And maybe this is just what he wanted to do. He's a horse that's always kind of been expected to be good, and thought he ran well last time against Echo Town, who we know is a tough son of a gun. So I feel like Digital from the outside post is one that I'd like to give a little look into here for in this turf sprint to come running late at these horses that, you know, in Wesley Ward with Maven.
Oh my God, we got to call a horse Marvin.
There's already one named Marvin.
Oh, there is he named for Marvin though?
No, and he can't win. And every time he does, Marv Texas all choice words. So
we need one. You know, we need Bet Runner Marv or something like that. Or he'll. That's a man. For those who don't know, Marv the Bet Runner. He's been. I don't think we've ever had him on our airwaves, but was a fabulous guest. One of the best guests we've had in all the years that Steve Bick and I, really Steve Bick letting me sit next to him for the NHC coverage over the last few years. We got him telling stories from his life with the whole assembled crew as our built-in laugh track, but nobody was forcing it. The guy's hilarious. Anyway, what I also like about how we've deconstructed this eighth race is I love that little description you gave a few weeks ago on Horse Players Happy Hour about the approach to turf sprints being speed of the speed and the horse with the fastest figures. Between our two picks, we've got both. They will be towards the top of the market, but I'm okay just trying to go to war in that spot with those two. We wrap things up, Jonathan, with a 7-furlong dirt race, Maiden Claimer 20. 3 and up on the Keeneland dirt, the last race on opening day at Keeneland. And my main opinion in here is to be against the favorite Spice Road, but I haven't quite made a final decision of where I want to land. Help me out.
Yeah. I mean, in these races, I always try to find horses that have speed that are dropping, just because I feel like there's some hidden improvements there. You know, they're facing horses they shouldn't be, and it's a lot of pressure on them. They got to move earlier. They got to run faster early, all these things. And so the one horse that I felt like kind of made a little bit of sense in that regard Magic Man's Touch. This horse started out with Al Stahl and was bet a little bit that day, was close enough first off, first start of the career to a fast pace, was entered in for 20. was tactical in there, got a nice speed figure, and then Larry Rivelli jumps in, takes the horse for 20, and then shows up here again. So I just feel like this is kind of Magic Man's touches friends. He's drawn to the outside, and I just feel like he'll get a good trip. This is a bunch of horses I just don't really trust, so I wouldn't really talk anyone off of anything in here. I just felt like Magic Man's touch had some hidden numbers in there that can make him a player in here.
That's the 13, stuck on the AEs, but very likely to sneak in, I would say. And sometimes those AEs who sneak in can provide just a little bit of extra value in the picks on a day like Keeneland opening day, when there's so many people's eyeballs on things, there could be a little juice there. So that's one that I like. I'm really hoping, and it almost definitely won't happen, but not just because the horse fits on form, but just because it's so much fun to say. And, you know, I miss Ali G. Booyakasha, the number 16, JK. What do you think of that runner?
It's a remarkable television show, if you've never seen it. One of my favorite shows of all time.
Is that we've never even talked about it, and I love it too.
You know, if you don't remember this, the scene where, or the time where he's trying to convince Donald Trump to do the ice cream glove.
Oh, I totally don't remember that at all. Oh my god! Trying to convince
him to do, like, he's like, when you eat an ice cream cone, what's the biggest problem? And he said it melts and it drips on your hand. So he had this invention of an ice cream glove.
It's fantastic. And
he was trying to pitch it to him like apprentice style. So
who
would have known that the guy that fell for that conversation would be our president?
It's pretty amazing. But I will say this also, JK, if anybody out there in the entire sound of my voice could use an ice cream glove, it's you.
I've been laying low on the ice cream.
Yeah, I talked about my 2-week reset as if it was an accomplishment. You've been getting fit. You've been getting ready.
I don't know how. I think it'll be 5 weeks. Don't get me wrong. I'm hopping right back on the wagon. or off of it. I'm jumping off of it. I'm jumping right off of it in a couple of days. But it's been nice. Nice little reset.
All right. Well, I'm going to dig a little bit more on this Keeneland race. If I come up with anything clever, I'll let folks know. But I just Spice Road just seems like a dropper that I don't trust, and I think is going to be bet a lot shorter than that 3-1. Am I overthinking this, or is this a correct horse to potentially oppose?
Yeah, I mean, nothing in there really moved me. There's certain types of horses I look for in maidens and these maiden claimers, and it's like I said, it's speed droppers, and I mean, sure, Spice Road could win, but just feels, you know, eight time trier. Short prices every time, can't get the job done, with Kieran, I don't even know who Lee is, and then Owen Hardy, and this horse is a foal to Avery Island, who's a stakes winner, and then this horse is four, he's been gelded. I just, putting blinkers on, goodness gracious. I mean,
they've tried a lot. It may be the day, but it'll be, I'll say this, it'll be without my money as, you know, maybe a little safer, but it's not one that I'm looking to get stuck into. Okay. Let's wrap things up here, Jonathan. It's a little bit shorter show. The shows are going to be very much variable lengths this summer as we deal with everything going on in our world and our various fun commitments. But thank you very much for your time today. We'll extend a thank you to our newest partners, who you heard from up top, our friends at Stable Duel, of course, Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, our founding partner, 10 Strike Racing. Always like to thank those cats for helping us get this show off the ground and their continued support. Most of all, want to thank all of you, the listeners, for making these shows so much fun to do. Hit us up through the new website over at inthemoneypodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe. Subscribe to our master feed. Subscribe to the individual shows feeds. Rate and review. Helps other people find the show, and it helps us. Keeneland, Grade 1 Gamble, coming up this Saturday. Get involved. Band together with some friends and get involved, or tell people you know who play in contests that they should get involved. Chance to play on a couple of different nationwide ADWs there. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Coatney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos. I can go run.
just me.